Welcome to the Culinary Mechanic Podcast. I am absolutely delighted to bring you another episode as we just stumble forth into the ether here. I think we're going to find some pretty cool people. Today I got a guy named Anthony Bucco, and he's out of New Jersey and been in New York City for a bit. Seems like he's really seen some great things. He's the Senior Vice President of Landmark Hospitality, and these folks take old buildings, actual landmarks, and convert them into pretty amazing hospitality spaces, restaurants and such. So once again, let's do a thing, man. I am so excited to have Anthony Bucco of Landmark Hospitality with us today. So Anthony, welcome. I appreciate you coming.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So let's get kicking because it's culinary mechanic time. Here we go. Tell me how you got started in this industry.
All right. Well, I mean, I it's funny, you know, the time that I started, you know, embarking on this career, the industry was completely different. You know, the amount of exposure, the amount of media, the amount of attention that's paid to culinary today is completely different than it was when I started cooking. And I started cooking, oddly enough, by, you know, via culinary school. You know, there was a time that most culinary schools wouldn't even qualify you as a candidate if you didn't have previous restaurant experience. And after doing, I'll say, a limited amount of due diligence, I found somebody who was willing to take me on and as a student without previous experience. And at the time, I was confused by that. I'm like, who wouldn't want, you know, whatever, tuition money or whatever the case. And then you start to realize that there's a massive amount of attrition in this business, pretty much from the moment you start culinary school till probably within 3 to 5 years after getting out. Yeah. And, you know, the schools wanted to make sure that they were making an investment in the industry as much as the individual is making an investment in the school. And I didn't let that, like, that didn't really factor into anything for a little while. And then when I started to get out in the industry, I started to realize that, wow, you know, I came into the business with these people and today there's not all of them here. Wow. So I kind of understood that. You know, for me to even pursue or to embark on culinary school, there were a few things that kind of, I guess, were driving forces or motivators behind that. Number one, growing up, you know, I mean, I've always said that to be a chef, you've got to be a good eater, and you've got to enjoy food. And you know, I mean, I'd like to believe that's true in my case anyway. And just a love for food and a love for eating led me to learn how to kind of want to cook. And coupled with that was, you know, you're at a point in your life when you're a young person and you don't really know what's next. And it was something, again, with not having the crystal ball or understanding of what the industry kind of entailed, I was like, you know what, let me give this a stab. And that's kind of what inevitably, I guess, pushed me in this direction. So landed at New York Restaurant School, did a certificate program. At the time I was currently working, I was doing a night crew, believe it or not, in a supermarket. Okay. Working in the frozen food aisle. So it was kind of like, you know, complete polar opposite, literally. You know, you work in a freezer and then the next, you know, during the day you're in a hot kitchen. Okay. So it was kind of fun. It was a nice juxtaposition of a lot of different things, but specifically life at that point. And you know, there was definitely an attachment to it and an understanding. You know, the beauty of cooking is it's skill based. And right. The more repetition and the more you practice, the better you get at something. There's a quantifiable aspect to success or, you know, lack thereof, I guess. Right. But really you can kind of monitor your own progress and growth, which is kind of cool. Where in a lot of other kind of, you know, lines of industry, it's a little less in front of you. Your realities are a little less pronounced. So it was an industry that, like I say, I started out without having too much of a frame of reference. And really kind of grew into and started to enjoy.
I think that's awesome. I mean, you know, for so many, it's like, well, I want some money. I'm 15. You know, my mother, her famous words to me were, no, boy, you want a job. You don't want money. You want a job. Okay. So I think it's cool that, like, you kind of looked around and found the something that you felt like you could dig into. You know, barrier to entry is huge in any industry, right? Like, how do you get in? So there's a lot of doors, but I definitely applaud the fact that you had the tenacity to find the program that would take you, right?
So yeah, cool. You know, and it's again, I think once I got there, I think I started to kind of understand what it looked like a little bit more. Right. And you know, the one thing that, again, in addition to being able to monitor your successes, your growth, and all of those things, there's also the other side of it. And the other side of it is, you know, it's there's a lot of synergies to me to athletics and, you know, joining a team. And, you know, every team has a superstar and every team has kind of the players that support the superstar. And every team has some people who are new to the roster. And you really do see kind of like what your future, your, both, you know, into the future and in your very near future, what they look like, because they're standing right next to you. And if you follow this pattern of behaviors and understanding of concept and skill and execution, you know what the next role looks like. And it's, you know, there's very little that's guarded. I mean, you know, it's dish comes back to the, you know, to the kitchen from the dining room, you know exactly where it's coming from and who prepared it. And there's a sense of accountability in this industry that kind of resonates into your own life. And, you know, there's a lot of different things outside of food, which I think create the attachment for somebody who's starting out or embarking in a culinary career. And there's an incredible amount of structure. And in some cases, you don't necessarily view it as structure. It's, you know, it starts to add up, I guess, as you start to kind of age or mature in the industry. Incredible amounts of discipline, a lot of focus, a lot of, you know, a lot of the intangibles that, you know, we put a lot of stock in regards to anything else that we've done in life that has yielded a successful result is kind of required on a minute by minute basis. You know, it's funny. I talk to a lot of friends who aren't in our industry and kind of speak to the fact that, you know, they've got deadlines to meet. You know, well, what's your deadline? It's like, you know, they'll tell you, it's like, oh, you know, got 2.5 weeks to finish this project. I'm like, dude, I work on 6 minute deadlines. Every time the chef yells fire table 31, 41, 62, and 81, it's like, you know, you're basically on a deadline. Yeah. And, you know, your deadline, you're judged on each and every one. And it's this repetitive nature. So there's that kind of competitive aspect to cooking that's really fun. There's the creative outlet, which we didn't really touch on yet, but there's so many different things that are just key motivators. And the one thing I'll tell you is it's never boring and it's never you know, there's never not a challenge in front of you.
Totally. I mean, you just probably rattled off five or six of my favorite things about the restaurant industry. Mm-hmm. I think I would throw on the end of that, like the community of it. You know, mm-hmm. I think that there's some, like, this is the one that comes up a lot, but like Anthony Bourdain talked about his ship of pirates, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a group that can like band together, but also like after work, there's just nothing quite like a cold beer after a hot shift, you know?
Yeah, no doubt about it.
The ability to bond on what we now know is some pretty amazing and perhaps traumatic experiences sometimes, but you know, I think that the bonding of that is pretty special.
And also awesome. Necessary, totally. You know, and it's special and necessary. And I bring that up just because I think the one thing that, yeah, again, just like anything else, everybody shares in the success and everybody feels a part of the challenges and the compromises and, you know, and some of the failure. And that's kind of what makes a team work. And ultimately, you know, you see this galvanization of people, you see people coming together to produce something that's kind of, you know, on a real, real elevated level. And I think it takes a little while, especially when you start to grow through the different stages of roles in kitchens, that you start to realize that, you know, there's more to it than even just the food. And that's like, you know, that's like next level stuff. You know, in the beginning, it's only about the food, you know, it's like, it's not about the costs, not about, you know, managing labor and efficiencies. It's not about, dare I say, guest experience. It's about the challenge of learning the next recipe and the next station and the next, you know, that's what it comes down to. Yeah. And it's funny, one day you wake up and you're in kind of that pseudo junior leadership role in a kitchen and they're like, you know, well, what's the cost of this? You're like, I don't know. It tastes really good. There's balance, you know, there's texture and it's seasoned properly. You know, but that's the whole other side of it that you're like, whoa, you know, yeah. You get through the process of learning how to cook and then it's, you have to learn how to lead people and manage finances. And it's a great industry because, you know, as you start to kind of progress through the different roles, there's so many different areas that somebody's strengths, you know, whether it's school-based, whether it's street start, whatever it is, there's always a spot for them to excel.
Totally.
So, I mean, and you see that.
Yeah. I really think, and for me, like what I learned over time was like beyond the food, beyond the station, beyond all that, it's people. And if you don't understand how to like get along with people and or understand like that guy is gonna do the same stupid thing or same amazing thing probably every day at about the same time after a while, right? There's pattern recognition to it,
Which
you
is
know?
the fun part too. You can kind of start
Totally.
to manage around that, or at least manage it to your strengths.
Right. And understand, I mean, sometimes it's why do you do that? And or like the dynamics of people, like you get the strong guy and the weak guy and the showboat and all these different personalities that start to come by. And how do you make that? How do you synergize that, right? Like get that to where these people all come together. So it's pretty awesome. So I guess my next question would be like, you got in, you really had a pretty good starter with the culinary school. Like you get moving, you get into some restaurants. What, like there's always an exit, I think, for people who are energized. You can go do anything you want, but like what says to Anthony, I'm gonna stay on and keep moving with this?
You know, that's a great question, and it's something that there were plenty of times I think that you start to question yourself and your ability, and can you do this? And you know, there's a light that goes off, and it's kind of amazing because everything, like you said before, it's all about pattern recognition and just the reinforcing behaviors, and you find that you have a lot of the same kind of habits as a person. And the biggest opportunity for you to see growth is when those habits and those behaviors start to be modified. And in some cases, it's because you've added a skill or a key point of knowledge. But I think there's a passion that precedes us, and that passion traditionally comes from somebody in a mentor form. You know, I'm not where I am today if I don't have, you know, if I don't land the externship that I landed. And when I say that, it could have been anywhere different, and maybe it would have been the same result. But you know, I had an opportunity to work for a chef who really made an investment in their team,
Nice.
and you know, I got a lot of the lessons, a lot of the why, versus like just do it. And that really kind of created, I guess, above everything else, was kind of a love for what I was doing. And when you have an understanding of why, you know, you're looking for, you know, the lobster shells when you're making a bisque at this temperature to make this sound, you know, when to deglaze and why you deglaze at that point. It's like you start to kind of really kind of interpret and really kind of ingest a lot of the positives of the why, you know, the technique. It's instead of just doing something because it's what you're told to do. And I hear it all the time. Like I'll have somebody who will start in a kitchen and be like, "Hey, why did you, you know, I noticed you did that with the mushrooms. Why?" "Oh, I don't know. It's just the way we were shown." Like, I like the fact that I had a mentor who actually took the time to kind of go through and explain why we do the things we do. And it really kind of gave me not only an affinity for the ingredients themselves, but more importantly, the steps and making sure that the steps you're taking reflect a great finished product. And once you know kind of the why, it makes it a little bit easier to apply yourself and put the energy and effort into something. I would say, you know, that was probably the hook that kept me. And then I think there's this contagious or addictive component to cooking that it's like, what's next? You know, so if we're working with mushrooms today, when am I going to learn how to work with whatever, you know, leafy greens? And then when do I move over to, you know, to figuring out how to kind of demystify the 8 million iterations of a potato? And it's a lot of fun to kind of like really grow, you know, incrementally through different experiences with cooking and ingredients.
I mean, you talk about kind of what's next. I remember being a prep cook in a steakhouse, and my station was just off the line to the side. It was kind of weird, but I was I faced perpendicular to the line, so I'm literally staring down the line. And I just remember thinking, one of these days, I want to be the grill guy, like right. And I got my wish one day, and I went, man, what were they thinking? Like, this is freaking hard, because it was wood fire. You know, the guy had a 6-foot poker, and he was working the whole thing, and it was exposed out to the front. So it was very kind of old fashioned or old world, you know. And he could move what was even better is the grate was sitting on rails, and he could move it forward and backward, not up and down like so many of the ones you see nowadays. But this and that grate must have weighed 100 pounds. Right. So he's moving this thing and he's poking it. And I thought, Oh my gosh, and that looks amazing. And then when I got on it, I was like, oh boy, this is going to be bigger than I thought. Okay. And, but it was the rise, right? It was like, okay, I'm going to beat this thing. And it took me a while, but
It does. And the
yeah.
hardest thing with meat is like, and I used to laugh, like I literally would. So, you said everyone has their own kind of methodology for how and why they cook meat to make sure they can hit a temperature, especially in
Totally.
the beginning. There's like, you're more obsessed with the structure of where you're placing things than actually just cooking. And that was kind of like my entry into cooking meat is, I would have this set up on my grill. So left to right, low temp to high temp. I would do the same thing on my seasoning tray. And when I put food in the window, everything would follow the same kind of pattern. And I remember, like, you'd get your ass kicked and you'd have a lot of orders coming into the kitchen. And it was like, I literally would have scrap paper and I'd mark down, I'd have R through what through W and like just kind of do hashes, like, okay, for this cut, this cut, this cut, this cut, just to kind of, as the chef's calling, just kind of check, check, check. And I remember, I think they allowed that to happen like 2 days. And I was kind of hiding it. It was off to the side. And I don't know if the chef or the sous chef knew, but they always know. And I remember it was like the third day, which was probably like a Tuesday, which is a lower volume night in a restaurant. I remember the chef coming over, grabbing my notes in the middle of like the hit, and probably predetermined that this was going to happen, dumped them in the garbage and said, "If you can't cook off of calls, then you can't cook." I'm like, "Okay." So all of a sudden, you realize that, like, a lot of the structure and a lot of the things that the way you organize in your, content in your own head doesn't necessarily always tie into being, effective for a professional kitchen cooking environment. And it's like, it was my way to keep up with how the tickets were coming in and, more importantly, what was on them. But that wasn't going to fly. And it's funny, in all of my years now cooking, I don't think anyone has ever written down temperatures when they were coming in. So I kind of understand where they were coming from. And the
I like
lesson
it. I
obviously
like it.
wasn't that kind. I'm sure I was told a multitude of other things, but it's like, you start to kind of understand that, it comes down to kind of really paying attention to the details of what you're doing. And with food, I mean, it's either right or it's not. It's ultimately like, you can overcook something, you can undercook something, and the realities are is you've got to be dialed in.
Yeah.
And I think you start to realize that too once you start to get a little confident in the first night that that first steak comes back in or that first lamb chop comes in that's a little under temp. And then all of a sudden there's four more plates by the end of the service and you're like, Jesus, sometimes you miss.
Right.
And it's humbling. And what's more humbling is, like I say, you're doing it on stage.
Yeah.
Everyone in the room knows that plate's walking back to you. And in open kitchens, every customer in the dining room knows that that plate's walking back to you. And it's how you kind of collect your thoughts and don't let a lot of the negative things that are impacting your day kind of really influence who you are and what you're, what the next and the future looks like for you. And it takes a real interesting, I'm not going to say, it takes an interesting personality to be able to thrive and succeed when, your failures are right there, and
Yeah.
everyone kind of gets a glimpse of them, and how you process it and how you move forward. It's like I say, there's got to be a little gumption in that belly that kind of keeps you moving forward. It's easier sometimes just to walk away. I told somebody this story. So like I said, I didn't have professional cooking experience before I went to culinary school. So I come out of culinary school, and I remember the first task at my externship site is to peel potatoes. So, I walk in, I get to meet everybody, yay, yay, yada, yada, all that good stuff. You're all ready to go. You're in your apron, you've got your toque, because back then they were required part of the uniform. And my first task, which is almost kind of, I guess, predictable, is to peel some potatoes. So the first question I ask is like, okay, do I use a peeler or a knife? And I remember the sous chef looking at me and kind of smiling, like, dude, do whatever you have to do, but peel the potatoes. And I'm like, okay, no problem. So they had me set up on front of the pass because it's kind of like pre-lunch service. And here I have a bucket and I have my potatoes and I'm peeling with a knife because I had watched my Irish mother peel potatoes with a paring knife my whole life. And I'm kind of going through them. And finally, the sous chef comes over to me. He's like, "Hey, do me a favor. I've got this peeler. Why don't you use this? We'll get a better yield." Probably chopping like 30% of the usable potato away when I'm peeling off skins. And I'm like, "Okay, no problem, chef." So now I'm peeling and I'm putting them in a bucket with no water in them. And I'm slowly not realizing, but they're oxidizing. So he's like, do me a favor, put some water on the potatoes so they don't oxidize. Yes, chef, no problem. So here I am, and I'm a little bit probably in my own head and not paying attention to details because I'm nervous. And being on the front of the pass, there's, seven or eight people behind the line who get to witness this firsthand, along with the sous chef and any servers or food runners or anyone else who's interested in a little bit of entertainment. So then I put the water in there and I'm continuing to add potatoes to the bucket and not realizing that there's, I don't know, water displacement. So now it's just like just a hot mess everywhere. And I remember him looking at me and like, okay, I think that's enough potatoes for today. So I take the potatoes away and they probably went off into the trash somewhere because they were oxidized or whatever. And you take a moment and you self-reflect there and it's like, Jesus, what am I doing? And it's like, I still have those moments. And granted, it's not with oxidized potatoes and it's not with water on the floor and it's not with using the wrong tool for the job. That's a reality and a function of being a chef. And you asked what makes you stay. I think it's a chance that you have opportunities in your own kind of mind to kind of create really amazing things, whether it's, you're cooking for dignitaries or cooking for family or cooking for loved ones or cooking for anyone for that matter, who's in your place and whether they're celebrating or not or anything in the middle. We are allowed to be involved in experiences that we don't really have a place at the table for, which I think is one of my favorite things about this industry. And then you think about, how frail and how easy it is to kind of take the train off the tracks by having a flare up of personality or having a breakdown of equipment or whatever the case may be. And you just kind of go through a litany of reasons that something shouldn't happen or be successful, and you ultimately kind of find a way to pull out of it and really kind of showcase well. I look at this because it's like in the course of a shift, if you will, you go through the highs and the lows and you succeed as much as you fail. But at the end of the day, a lot of people leave happy. And I think that's really the reason that you stay, you chase it. You're chasing that feeling. You can't feel really good in the kitchen unless you felt really bad. And I think that's kind of what is the obsession, and that's the motivator. And it doesn't just extend to how you feel in your mind. It extends to the growth and development of your plates, the growth and development of your flavors, your recipes. And you really can obsess over those details. And when I say obsess, I look at that as a healthy obsession when everything you do is about making another step to make something better. And you start to realize that as your experience starts to compile, your opportunity to kind of create something that's worse starts to go away. That risk starts to diminish because your palate has grown and your technique and your skill. And that's when you really will never leave. So it's like, it's kind of like that three phases, right? It's the first, it's understanding that like you have to be kind of simultaneously egotistical in a positive way. Like, and it's more about like having self-confidence. So ego is always a bad word, but it's a real word. Coupled with this kind of frailty, like empathetic kind of feel towards everything, because you're going to stand in front of successes and you're also going to look really bad. And in the middle of all of that is kind of the truth, right? And then you kind of take that on every level, through every step, through every year, through every plate. And that's really what your life is. And it's a lot of fun in a really cryptic, weird, super maybe self-destructive or self,
Maybe.
promoting or whatever the case may be. But it's what we choose, and it's amazing.
I mean, I think I used to work for a chef, and when we, if we were having a bad day, or if, like for whatever reason, the mood wasn't great, he'd walk through the kitchen and go, "Hey, we get to do this for a living. We get to affect people's lives. We are
Correct.
superheroes. We." And as I worked a little while longer with that guy, and then I was a sous chef, and he would look at me and go, "You are a chef. You have fucking superpowers that people don't possess. You have the ability, you have abilities that that people will revere for years to come." He goes, "And you don't even realize it because it's your everyday thing." And I think that I mean, I've taken that now years later to be like, wow, what are the things that I can do? Like, you know,
It's funny you say that. Like, and think
it's
about that. And
yeah.
it's wild, right? When I started cooking, there was no food media. There was no Food Network. There was, I mean, even like, I don't even know if PBS at that point had anything, you know, maybe whatever, you know, the old players. But it's like, man, you wake up one day and you're like, there's a reason that the media, there's a reason that TV, there's a reason that, you know, chefs are put in roles that are quite prominent in popular culture. And the reason is it's like there's a story behind every talent in the kitchen.
So check it out. Seems like this is as good a point as any to stop this conversation, because I'll be 100% honest with you. I was rolling back through and I'm editing the whole damn thing and I'm looking at it and I'm listening to it and I'm having such a great time listening to what Anthony has to say. I can see that I'm enjoying the conversation as I'm listening to him and I'm watching him on the screen. And I'm realizing I don't want to edit this down and just make it, I don't know, like, 30-ish minutes, because the whole damn thing was just about 50 minutes. So what I decided to do was just kind of find a good breaking point, which I found, and give you this little blurb and tell you we're gonna get back at it next week, because I think this guy has a lot of great fucking things to say that we all need to hear. He's got great insights on the industry, has done real well for himself, and I think that it's worth it to me to get those messages out to the world. So with that, I'll see you next week for more Culinary Mechanic Podcast. Thanks. Bye.